everyone. This is Luke Jean-Louis, the host of the Deep Voice Man Show. Thanks for joining us today. We have a treat in store for you guys. Our guest is Martha Hoy, and she reached out to me on social media, and like many people do, and we hit it off, and she has a great story, an amazing story. And she is a philanthropist, a survivor, a author, a world traveler, and just all around amazing person. And she has a story to share of resilience, of perseverance, grit, of compassion. And definitely it's an honor to have her as a guest on the show. And as you can imagine, she's a very busy woman, so she was able to carve out some time in her packed schedule to sit down and have a chat with me. So we're very blessed and fortunate to have her here. Thank you so much, Martha, for coming on. I guess to start off, can you tell us about you and what you're doing, what you're up to now? If you can just tell us about your background and your story.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. And, my story is, I wrote two books about my story so far. I'm working on the third one. The first one is called Lead With Your Heart. The second one is called Enjoy the Journey.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm an author, I'm a registered nurse, and I'm a speaker, and I also founded a charitable foundation in Las Vegas, Nevada called Mother Martha Family Foundation. That foundation was born from my story. In fact, there's been two charitable foundations that were started from my life story. One is in East Africa called Amica Foundation Africa. My story begins in West Virginia, actually. I was a nurse in West Virginia, and I was doing my first book, Lead With Your Heart, talks about how does a nurse from West Virginia become connected to a country in East Africa, Uganda. So I was a nurse in West Virginia, and I had been in a severe car accident. Three people were killed, and I had 15 surgeries. I made the front page in the newspaper the next day. Not a good way to get your first 15 minutes of fame, but
right.
Yeah, well, it is what it is. So, as I was recovering, that was sort of like the catalyst that changed my life. You know, I was a young woman. I had just started out in life. I was newly married. You know, things were, the future looked so bright, right? So I was driving home from work. You know, it was a Friday evening. I was, like I said, young, healthy, just starting out in the world. And all of a sudden, my life has changed to the point where I was in a hospital bed, and the only thing I could see was the ceiling. My whole world was completely changed in seconds. I was rear-ended from behind at a very high speed. So as I was recovering from this, a friend of mine who was sort of unconventional, because I kept getting all these phone calls for people saying, oh, get well soon. Wonderful. What can we do for you? You know, how can we help you? Well, not my friend Sylvia. My friend Sylvia said, I'm going to bring you a book. Okay.
Sure. Right.
So the reason that she did that was that she said, Martha, I feel like this could go either way. Either you're going to use this for good and you're going to overcome it, or you're going to play the victim. And the book that she brought me was called Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl.
Wow.
Viktor Frankl was a man who survived the Holocaust in one of the worst concentration camps of World War II. Not only did he survive, he thrived, came out. He was a physician, and he ended up helping many people afterwards. So I read that book in one day as I was at home recovering. I had 15 surgeries, two new knees, hip. My face was completely distorted. I had to have my face reconstructed. I literally
Wow.
bought myself as I said, I couldn't move. I can only see the ceiling. I literally lost myself. I had to have my face reconstructed. It took about a year to recover. That book helped me tremendously. That book helped me to see. You know, it was kind of a, you know, that moment when you go, oh, you know, if this man could use his perception of life to use what he had went through to help others, I can too, right? So it made me realize that it's not what happens to you. It's about who you become. What do you do with that? Do you heal yourself and then use it to help others? So that was sort of the catalyst that changed my life. At the time, I was going to nursing school. You know, the doctors kept saying, you're never going to do this and you're never going to do that. Well, you know, don't tell me what I'm not going to do.
Mm.
So I graduated from nursing school 2 years after that, in 2005. So that was my dream. That had always been my dream, to be a nurse. So as I'm going along, you know, working as a nurse with all these replacement parts now, right, 15 surgeries and all of this. So, you know, my then husband was a good man in many ways. In many ways, he was not. So I had started doing charity work in Uganda, and I had a sponsored child named Jeffrey. His brother had been adopted by a friend of mine who lives in Minneapolis, Minnesota. So as the time went by, and people asked me, you know, what was the trigger? I don't know if, you know, if it was there and I missed the signs, or, you know, if it just escalated because of the stress. But, you know, the relationship became more and more abusive. In 2018... on Mother's Day, which is ironic because of my work in Uganda, I had gotten the nickname Mother Martha. So on May 13th, 2018, the abuse had just gotten to the point where I knew it was time to go. It was time to go. That evening, I was sitting in my bed, and I was watching television, and I had a dog, and you know how you just spend a nice leisurely evening, you know, watching television, just relaxing for the evening. And my then husband came in the room, and I knew that things were escalating. And what I had done previously is I packed a suitcase and put it in the closet at the foot of my bed, because things had been escalating for quite some time.
Wow.
It was getting very dangerous for me. I look back at pictures of myself then, and I don't even recognize myself, actually. So what happened was, he came in the room, I'm in my pajamas, and I knew I had to grab the suitcase and run. I knew right then and there, before he even got near me, from the look on his face, from what was going on, that I had to run. I had to run for my life. There was no doubt about that. So there was a struggle. There was a struggle at the door. And I had no idea where I was going to go. I just knew I had to run. Why didn't I have any place to go? Because everyone in my life, including my own parents, everyone, when I reached out to them, had said, basically, you know, I had nowhere to go. I had no one to turn to, because everyone had turned their backs on me. They didn't believe me. They thought I was overreacting. And as I said, if you look at pictures from me back then, I don't know how they didn't know, but so as we're going down the hallway, and I'm struggling out the door, and I have a suitcase, and we're struggling, and I get to the end of the porch, and at the end of our porch was the driveway where my car was sitting outside. And I remember it was sort of like a moment when I said, I'm going to take my power back. You know, I was this abused woman. I was this battered, you know, I was like a shell of a person. So all of a sudden it just came over me, and I looked at him and I said, you will never see my face again. I got in my car and I drove down the interstate. It's like a 4-lane interstate. And I didn't know where I was going. As I said, everybody had said, forget you. So the first person I thought of was that sponsored child in Uganda. I knew of all people in this world, he was someone who never let me down. We had started a charitable organization together. We had done these things to try to help other children. Never had he had let me down. He had always kept his word. I didn't know what he was going to do from 7,000 miles away or what he could do, but I just knew to pick up the phone. So I called him on the other side of the planet, and, you know, I'm uncontrollably crying. I don't know where I'm going, and I talk just like, this is what happened. And I was like, I've got to pull over and get cash. You know, it's just like, and he said, Martha, very calmly, go to my brother. My brother lives in Minneapolis. We will find a way to get you to my brother. You have done so much to help me. You have done so much to help that he will take care of you. He will just go there. Just be safe and go there. So I had a friend that I had went to high school with that was living a couple of hours away. So I called her and I told her what happened, and I said, can I come to your house just for a couple of days until we could figure out how to get me to Minneapolis and to safely get me to Minneapolis? You know, and I'm just going to say, now looking back, I'm very grateful for everything that happened, but it was quite frightening because just walk away from your life, everything you've ever known and had, and not knowing what's going to happen to you.
Right.
So I stayed 3 days there with my friend, and we scraped the money together, you know, any way we could. And I got a ticket from Charleston, West Virginia, to Minneapolis, Minnesota. I knew what I was dealing with, who I was dealing with, and I knew before I left the state of West Virginia that I had to file for divorce, because I knew coming back to the state of West Virginia meant nothing good. Okay. So I called a friend of mine who was a divorce attorney. I flew out the following, that was a Sunday. I flew out on that Wednesday morning. And I called her and asked her if I could stop at her office and file for divorce. Well, she kind of knew things were going on, but, you know, she didn't know the whole story. And she said, sure. And I, you know, so I got there. I sat at the end of this big long table, and I signed and filed divorce papers. And I got on a plane to Minneapolis, Minnesota. And I have to say that that's a point in my life when I realized just how toxic my life had become. When I was looking out the window of the airplane and I saw the clouds and I felt the freedom, I'm free, I can do whatever I want, you know. And it was like coming up for air. When I got to Minneapolis, it was, you know, I wasn't been anxious because although I knew Jeffrey well and I knew my friend well, my friend Tracy, you know, she had adopted Ivan, Jeffrey's brother, here and brought him here. But I had never seen Ivan. I had never looked at his face. So I'm sitting at Minneapolis Airport in front of the big black grand piano, and anybody that's been there knows where I'm talking about. So I'm sitting there, and I call this young man, and I'm looking. He sent me a picture, and I'm looking at a picture on my phone, and I'm looking around to see if I could recognize him. And I'm sitting there realizing that what I'm going through. So I'm sitting on that bench. I'm a shell of a woman. I'm abused, battered, defeated in every way, body, mind, and spirit, just defeated. And I'm waiting for someone to come help me and pick me up that I've never met in a place that I have never been.
Wow.
So I had, but you know, people say, were you afraid or whatever? But when you have no other choice, when you know the part of going back is not an option. And I knew that they had to, I knew they were good people because my friend Tracy, you know. So when he came to pick me up, I knew who he was when he came around the corner because he had the same smile as his brother.
Mm-hmm.
I just had the suitcase. He put it in his car, and I looked at him, and I said, Ivan, you know, what's next? And what I meant was, like, what's for dinner? But, you know, he's a young man of 24, and he says something very philosophical that sort of, again, kind of woke up my mind. And he says, well, Martha, now we live. So it's like, okay. So as we were driving through Minneapolis, and it was the first time I'd ever seen the city before. I'd never been to Minnesota. I'd never even really been to the Midwest that much. And I was thinking, you know, that's a really profound thing you just said, because, you know, I was on the plane and I was thinking how my life had been so toxic and what I had just lived through and what I had just ran from. I think sometimes that we forget to live, that we are held on by circumstances or even our own thinking sometimes. And we forget to live. We forget to enjoy the little things in life. So I spent 4 months in Minnesota. I got a divorce over the telephone. A lot of people think now that's that's pretty badass, and I guess you would say it is. As a nurse, I got a job in St. Paul, Minnesota. I'm very, very thankful for everyone in Minneapolis, St. Paul area. It was a very wonderful place to heal. People are very friendly. It's a very quiet place in the nature. The parks there are fabulous. So it was, and I knew I was surrounded by people that cared about me. And I got a job as a nurse, and I clocked out for lunch, got a divorce over the telephone, and then clocked back in. That was July the 7th, 2018. So when I met this young man, Ivan, and then he has a roommate named Joe. Joe is from Rwanda. Ivan is from Uganda. When I met these two young men, I had no idea exactly how important they would be in my life. But now I know that they saved my life, because if they hadn't had said, when I called Jeffrey and he called them and they said, come, I don't even want to try to fathom what would have happened to me. So they kept me safe for 4 months. Two young men that are bachelors, Joe, where's the clean towel? And he points to one on the floor. No, Joe, that's a dirty towel. that's not a clean towel, right? So, and I've always kind of been Mother Martha, to Jeffrey and Ivan. So I just kind of became Mama Martha to Joe, even though he's not that much younger than me.
Right.
So it's kind of like, I became like, let's clean up the mess. And, I learned a lot about Rwandan culture as well when I lived with them, and they shared food with me. And so after 4 months, and I had the divorce, and I felt like that I was healed enough that I could move on with my life, although I was very grateful for them. It was time for me, now that I was healed, to find out who I am. As a person, as a woman, everything. So my friend that I had spent 3 days with had moved to Las Vegas, and she was like, hey, come to Las Vegas. What a better place to start your life again as a single woman, and you're healed from the abuse. I mean, physically I had healed. Of course, there were still some other things. So I came to Las Vegas October of 2018 to stay with my friend. How exciting, right? A whole new life, bright lights of Vegas, and, there's so much stuff here to do, and it's such an exciting place, right? Especially, I always say I went from the most boring place on the planet, Blaine, Minnesota, to Las Vegas, but it's a joke because I do love Minnesota. But it was a whole new life. Again, I had the suitcase, and I didn't have much more, but guess what? I had my life. And the thing that I learned the most from that experience is everything can be taken from us in life, everything. And just think about Viktor Frankl. Everything was taken from him, even his name. He was given a number, right? Everything can be taken from us. Everything was taken from me. I had a suitcase. But guess what? I still had my life. I still had the right to choose how I responded to all of this. So with that in mind, I wrote the first book, Lead With Your Heart, because that's the one thing that none of it could take from me was how I chose to respond. I wanted to use everything that had happened to me and turn it into something rooted in love. I wanted to, first of all, I wanted to give back to the orphanage where these young men grew up in Kapala, Uganda. It's called Balamu Children's Village. Because of the morals and values instilled into these young men, and these are young men who, you know, lost their parents, who were street children, who were taken in by the gentleman that runs the orphanage. And because of that experience, teaching these children good morals, values, you know, all of these things, I'm still here.
Mm-hmm.
That place has touched many hundreds of lives, not just mine. But, you know, so that was my first thing, is I wanted to give back to them, first and foremost. So when I wrote Lead With Your Heart, it was kind of like the story of how does a nurse from West Virginia, what I went through, it was about going through the accident, what I went through, how I overcame it. And it talks about the abuse in my marriage and how Jeffrey helped me. So I wrote that book, and then I decided it was, I had saved some money, and I decided that it was time for me to find out who I was. It was kind of like a trip of self-discovery. First of all, I wanted to do all the things that I always wanted to do in life because I couldn't. You know, when you live in an abusive situation, people control your, that abuser controls your every move. They even control your personal items. No, this has to go here. No, you have to do this. And you didn't load this dishwasher right. Or you didn't. Now I was free. I could do whatever I wanted to. I could go wherever I wanted to go. So I sat down and I made a list. You know, everybody calls it the bucket list. I just called it, you know, things I'm going to do. And so I wrote a list. I wanted to go to New York City because, you know, of course, you know, I'm known for my love of pizza and Coca-Cola, but I love all food. So I wanted to come to New York City. I had been there before, but it had been a very long time, and I wanted to see all the things that make New York wonderful, right? Or pizza is on that list, and some of the best in the world. So then I wanted to see the Eiffel Tower in Paris. I wanted to see pizza in Milan, which I did. And I wanted to go to the Middle East, and I have a friend who lives in Dubai, who's also Ugandan. And my, so this is when Enjoy the Journey starts, that book starts, and it talks about my journey of becoming. So I wanted to go to the Middle East, and I wanted to see my friend that lives in Dubai. And then, obviously, I wanted to go to Uganda, and I wanted to see Jeffrey, and I wanted to throw my arms around him. But where are you going? So, and that's what I did. I got on the plane. I packed that suitcase, you know, the suitcase that I had left with in West Virginia that I had ran with as an abused, battered woman. So I packed that suitcase, and I went on what I say is one hell of a journey. I did it by myself. As I said, I visited friends in Dubai, and I met people along the way, and I met some pretty interesting people along the way, and that's in my book as well, who I met along the way and how they're still in my life. And I went to Uganda. And when I got to Uganda and really, first of all, I have to say, when you first see Uganda, and this is, I don't know if this is for everyone, but this has always been for me. And even when I've seen it after, it's like after you first get to see it. You know, Winston Churchill called Uganda the Pearl of Africa. It is absolutely probably one of the most beautiful places I've ever seen, and I've been in a lot of places. The shores of Lake Victoria are picturesque. It's like God painted a picture for you, just for you, untouched by humans. You know, and after I got there and you go into the capital city, which where the foundation is that Jeffrey started, Emeka Foundation Africa. And the reason that foundation was started was because, you know, if children there are lucky enough to be in an orphanage. Let me just give you a picture of this country. It's a country of 40 million people, but they have 2.5 million orphans. Most of them are homeless. So you have 4 and 5 year olds that are living on the streets by themselves. So, you know, what if they get into orphanages? So, but just like here, you know, in the foster system, they, you know, they become of age and they have to go, right? In their country, there is no social programs. There's no social programs whatsoever. So there's nothing to help them. So when Jeffrey started Abaca Foundation Africa, he did so in the thought was to help the children coming out of the orphanage get job skills, a way to give a hand up and not a hand out, teach them how to do something. So there are different classes, computers, there's design, like fashion design, hairdressing, things like that, skills that they can take in their community and use to support themselves and their families. So, you know, my friend picks me up and we're going through the streets of Kampala, and that's, you know, really what it hit me, because after everything I had been through, you know, this is the young man that helped me on the other side of the planet. So that's when we decided to start Mother Martha Family Foundation in Las Vegas. That's when that thought was started, is when I was there on that trip of self-discovery. Really getting in there and going into areas where there are, you know, groups of homeless children. You know, you're 5 years old. How do you get food? How do you support yourself? What do you do? Right. So that's when that idea became, is in this trip. Now, you know, in back in West Virginia, as I said, everyone had turned away from me. But on this trip, not only did I discover who I was, I also built a whole new family of people, and I write about those people and enjoy the journey. So that's why we decided to call the foundation Mother Martha Family Foundation, because not only had it become known as Mother Martha, but I also built a new family based, you know, after running.
Wow.
So, you know, after that trip, you know, I came home. I do write about, you know, how I feel about men and some romantic relationships there. I came home, but then the pandemic hit, and I'm a nurse, and I'm also starting this foundation here. And, well, you know, as they say, the rest is history. So the third book I started writing about is it picks up where it left off in Enjoy the Journey, and it talks about being a nurse in the pandemic. It talks about trying to do charity work during a pandemic and what it was like when I myself survived COVID. So,
wow.
Yeah.
That's true. That is an amazing story.
Yeah, so, you know, definitely.
That was just incredible. And, you know, all the twists and turns, and all the things that you have to put up with, and you're still here, and that's so amazing. And there's so many lessons to learn from you. And, you know, there's a guy, I'm sure you've heard of, Joe Rogan. He's the number one podcaster in the country. He says that people need to realize they have to be the star of their own movie. Their life's a movie, and they have to be the star. And clearly you are the star of your movie. And an amazing story it is. You know, obviously, it starts off with you being in West Virginia as a nurse, and you get into this car accident. And then you read this book, a life-changing book, and I'm all about reading books. I've heard of that book by Frankl. Definitely haven't read it yet, but definitely will. And it's interesting, you talked about that during the accident that you lost yourself, right? But then I'm sure after a while you definitely found yourself, if it was lost. And again, thank you for sharing this incredible story. You know, it's interesting. You alluded to this, or you mentioned this outright, that, you know, life is 10% what happens to you, 90% how you respond, and you're living proof of that. Of course. So you essentially survived the car accident, then you survived this destructive, abusive marriage, this horrible individual. You get out of there alive, and, you know, you get you realize that you had, there was no turning back. You had to do something, and you know, your back was against the wall, and you figured out a way to escape. And then you got that divorce over the phone, which is, I definitely think, is badass, as you say. And so, and then you go to Minnesota, and you know, you essentially, you know, you become a nurse there, and you know, you said it was a great, peaceful place. Well, in that case, I definitely have to visit Minnesota and whatnot. And so, but you know, you also got to travel the world, which is amazing. Travel to different places. That's one of my goals: travel the world. And obviously, you know, I'd love to write a book and whatnot. And so, it's just incredible. You know, you go to this car. So the car accident you mentioned was a catalyst. So I see what you mean there.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. And that kind of got the story going. And then it ends up with you in Africa starting this wonderful charity to help. You know, I was unfamiliar with the crisis in Uganda, the situation with so many orphans. I didn't really know that until you told me. 40 million people,
yes,
and 2.5 million orphans.
Yeah.
They don't know what to do with them when they get, you know.
Yeah. So yeah, it's and it's not getting any easier. It's not getting any better because now that they have political unrest, and in my book I talk about a gentleman that I become friends with along the way who is in politics there, and my friend Zach K. Francis has been kidnapped and tortured many times in the last few years.
Wow.
So now not only do they have this issue going on, and now it is not, it's getting much worse because now they have political unrest and they have violence in the streets. So, you know.
Wow. Yeah, it's a country that has many challenges. Hopefully they'll overcome them soon. And obviously you're helping with the charity, the organization that you set up there. And, you know, it's interesting that you got the help of so many people. You know, you had the friend who gave you the book. You had the gentleman who told you about his brother in Minnesota. Then when you go there, the guy, when you said, you know, what do I do next? He says, now you live. And that was very profound. Yeah. And that's what you did.
And that's what I did. And that's when I said I miss out on all of these things, you know. And traveling, the one thing that I, you know, learned right away is traveling when you meet new people. And like I said, I brought in a whole new family from the trip. People from all over the world, different cultures, places. That in itself, I think everyone should travel. Maybe not the extent that I did, like, ooh, let's go all over the world and find who I am. But, you know, I think you should, because it changes your perception of life. It changes your perception of you. I know when I lived with Ivan and Joe, and they're, you know, they have been in the United States for a while, but one's from Uganda, one's from Rwanda. Even just talking about the different places that we're from and how things were when we were growing up, and then going to different places and seeing the different perceptions of life. You know, well, first of all, I was going, they were going, why do Americans do this? I don't know. Why do we do that? Maybe I need to find out. Why do we do that? So that's why I say I found out who I was, because it was a big eye opener. I got to do things. I got to see amazing things. I got to meet wonderful people. But in the end, when I get back to Las Vegas, I realized how strong. I was like, you know, people say, are you angry at your ex-husband? Are you angry at these people that did these things? Are you angry about it? No. Why? I'm thankful, because if it wouldn't have happened the way that it was, I would not be who I am today, because I always say at the end of my talks, you know, thank you to those who abused me. Thank you to those who ignored my cries for help. Thank you to those who bullied me. Because of you, I'm this strong and wise. only am I strong enough to stand up for myself, I'm strong enough to stand up for other people now.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's deep. That is amazing. And, you know, they're sort of like blessings in disguise and whatnot.
Sure.
You know, it's interesting. You don't see it when it's happening, but with perspective. Yeah.
So when it's happening, you're like, oh, this is awful. This is painful. Mm. This is terrible. This is, you know, running for your life. No one wants to do that. You know, I mean,
right.
That's something that we all sit around and go, yes, please give us more problems. No. You know, at the time, it's awful. But as I said, I chose to respond out of love. I chose. The one thing that no one can take from us is how we respond to what's happened to us. And I hope that, you know, now that the world is changing and, you know, pandemic is getting better and things are starting to improve, that our work will also continue to expand.
Right. And I'm sure it definitely will. And I guess that brings me to our next question. And thank you so much again for sharing that amazing, inspiring story. Obviously, you've been helping a lot of folks, you know, writing the book. You know, obviously people reading the book, learning from it, being inspired from it, and then with the charities, the philanthropy and whatnot. And I'm curious now, bring it up to the current day. You know, we all got hit with that sucker punch, the pandemic. I'm curious, what challenges has the pandemic posed for you or your organization?
Well, you know, for me as a person, you know, I put on my scrubs and laced up my shoes and went into the hospital, you know,
right.
And worked, then contracted it and survived it. So, you know, that is the whole, again, another book that I'm starting. And now, as far as the charity work, of course, that was affected because, you know, economically, the whole world was affected. And in my books, and when I write about all these things, I write about what they taught me. And a lot of times I do put that on my social media, too. So if anybody's interested in reading some of it, because I put it out there, too, as well. You know, I write about what these things taught me along the way. And one of the things the pandemic made me realize, you know, that one single event, affected everyone on the planet. There was no one's daily lives that were not affected by the pandemic in some way. And it you know, we're all connected. So you know, we're social beings. We need each other. Social distancing is a word that has made me very angry. We should never distance ourselves socially. It should have been physical distancing for safety. But, you know, we need each other. And, you know, so as far as the charity work, well, the need increased, obviously, especially for these children. I mean, they already had, you know, they were already 2.5 million living on the streets, and then you add a pandemic with that for Uganda. And then for them, you add the political unrest, you know. And then economically, people couldn't give like they were giving because, you know, jobs were lost, businesses were lost, you know, so,
right.
You know, I mean, and even at the orphanage at Malamu, you know, I know a lot of children lost their sponsors because people lost their jobs, and not just in the United States. People lost their jobs in Europe, and people lost, you know, because they have people that help from the Netherlands and other England, other countries. So, you know, so that need has gotten greater, and we have less people that can help. So my friend that I told you that I came here to live with, that's when she decided that maybe we should help in Las Vegas, and she decided to take up that part of it because, you know, then you saw more issues here because in Las Vegas, economically, the town runs on tourism. We get 40 people from all over the world every year. So, you know, people lost jobs in the casinos and all of these, you know, I mean, it's just, I'm writing about this in my next book, is as a nurse, I had a pass so I could go out. Because when the pandemic first came and the quarantine came in March of 2020, you had to have a pass saying why you were outside.
Mm-hmm.
As a nurse, I had to go outside because I had to get to the patient.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so creepy. I'll never forget it. It was 4 o'clock in the morning, and I'm driving down Las Vegas Boulevard, one of the most famous roads in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the only one on it. It looked like Las Vegas had died. There was no people, no other cars, nothing. This is a place that's normally booming with bright lights and people being happy and people celebrating. And it was just me.
Hmm.
And it was, I almost mourned. It was like, okay, you know, it was, you know, the movie, The Day the Earth Stood Still, that's what it felt like. There was nothing there. It was just me. But then I did something ornery, too. I was like, well, you know, I'm never going to be on Las Vegas Boulevard by myself ever again. So maybe I'm just going to do an illegal U-turn right here. I'll never get to do this again, right? And that's what I did. So, you know, it from the perspective of charity work, you know, the need got greater, but you had your help. You know, you didn't have a whole lot of hope, and with good reason, you know.
Hmm. Wow. And so that's amazing. It's interesting. So, but thank you again for sharing your story. And I also want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for being one of those frontline essential workers, being a nurse and helping people, guiding people, rescuing people during this very tough period.
Yeah, I always say that, you know, being a nurse is not something you do. It's something that you are. And once you're a nurse and you love it and you love being there for people and you love helping people, it's something you never turn off. It's something that never goes away. And I've always thought, well, I'm going to leave nursing and I'm going to, you know, especially the pandemic, you know, kind of stress us all out. And but I don't think I could ever, ever not be a nurse.
Wow.
I think I will always
thank
be
you.
In some capacity, you know, even if I decide not to be at the bedside in the hospital anymore, in the future, what's in the future, what we're hoping for is that I want to, with our foundation, is once things get kicked back in and we can start helping these children, is that we want to help with medical things as well.
Mm. Wow.
So
wow, that's
I'll
amazing.
Always be a nurse in some capacity somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Wow. You were a nurse in West Virginia, a nurse in Minnesota, now a nurse in Nevada. Amazing. Everywhere they need nurses, of course. So.
Yeah. And, you know, I have license in other states that I haven't, you know, used for quite a while, but definitely we want to help the medical community in Uganda at some point. But first the children, and then we'll branch out into that.
Wow. Amazing. You know, Mark Twain once said that everyone has two birthdays, the day they were born and the day they figure out why. And you know both your birthdays, which is amazing. You know what your true calling is, to help others, and not just as a nurse, but in every way that you can. And it's interesting how you talk about a nurse is not what you do, but it's what you are. And I think that's very profound and whatnot. And so and we're definitely very thankful for all the nurses and healthcare workers who've had to go, and many have died who've contracted COVID, and you contracted COVID.
Sure.
You're able to survive, and thank
sure.
God for that.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. In New York City, we had a tradition where at 7 o'clock, I believe, everyone would clap and cheer for,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if they did this anywhere else, but we did that in New York, yeah.
Yeah.
For the healthcare workers. And you mentioned that we're all socially connected. That's what this pandemic has showed us, that we are all social animals. And you know, there's something to that because the longest lived people in the world, they found, is they have strong social lives and whatnot. And that's one of the reasons why they're the longest lived people in the world. It's not just what they eat or exercise, but that social health is so important. Now, you talked about the tourism in Las Vegas dropping to almost zero. Did you say before 44 million people come to Vegas every year? Is that correct?
40 million people from all over the world visit Las Vegas every year.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Quite a hip happening place. And I plan on visiting soon myself at some point, but obviously not during the summer. It gets really hot.
Yeah. It's too hot here in the summer. Yeah.
Definitely. And it's interesting. So, it is spooky when you see no one else around. I remember walking through Times Square, and it was like a ghost town. And Times Square, just like
mm-hmm.
that area in Las Vegas, one of the most popular streets
mm-hmm.
in the world. And no one there. So I get the feeling. It was like that movie you mentioned, The Earth Stood Still movie.
It was like Earth Stood Still, right.
Yeah.
Like, I'm the only person here. What is this? It's so eerie. Yeah.
Yeah, and for me, the movie that did it was I Am Legend with Will Smith. It kind of reminded me of that a little bit with Times Square being empty.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's weird how life mimicked a film in that way. It's weird. So, obviously, with the pandemic, there's been a bigger need for charity and whatnot, and your organization has been helping people a lot through this time, which is absolutely amazing. Obviously, we're going to get to a world where the post-pandemic world where this thing goes away for the most part, if not all of it, and hopefully sooner rather than later, particularly with the ramped-up distribution of vaccines and whatnot. Where do you see things going in the future? Where do you see yourself in that future?
Well, for me personally, as I said, I feel like once we, you know, get things really going with helping the children, because I have my friend here in Las Vegas that helps me, and then I have an aunt on the East Coast that helps me. Mm-hmm. So eventually I want my aunt to take on running all of the things for the children. And I want to branch out, and I want to help medically in Uganda.
Okay. Wonderful. Amazing.
So that's what I want to do. I want to use that. And I have friends that are doctors there. I have friends that are, you know, that are willing to help from other places. So as I said, it's just getting things back and getting things running. Yeah.
Right. Wonderful. My understanding is that Africa as a whole, their population is going to expand quite a bit in the future. And it's going to, I think, perhaps double or more than double. And so hopefully that the political and economic challenges there get solved, pretty quickly, and soon and whatnot. Always wanted to visit Africa. Being Black American myself, you know, obviously I want to visit there.
As I said, you kind of, I know, you know, Winston Churchill does not need my approval, but it's like it's in my first, when I first got there, and I got a hotel room on Lake Victoria, and I went out on the balcony, and I just took in the scenery, and it was like, he's absolutely right. He doesn't need my approval, but it is, it's absolutely, it's just like God painted a picture just for you, untouched, just absolutely gorgeous.
Wow, that's amazing.
It is definitely, and when I tell people, you know, because they're like, well, you went all these places, you know, I went to Paris, I've been to Italy, and in my lifetime, I've been, you know, just, that was just in that trip. And I always say that my heart is the happiest there. In any place, Las Vegas, love you, mean it, but, you know, as far as any place on the planet where I'm the happiest, and that's on the shores of Lake Victoria in TB, Uganda.
Wow. That's amazing. So definitely got to check it out. You should be a part of their tourism board if they have one.
Yeah, I should. See, I could sell. I could sell trips.
Definitely. And so you said Winston Churchill talked about this as well. Is that correct?
Yes. Winston Churchill called that area of Africa the Pearl of Africa.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Wow. Amazing. Definitely have to check out that, without a doubt. And thank you so much, obviously, for that travel recommendation. And I just, again, want to thank you for sharing your story. I'm curious, what key important life lessons do you want to share with us? Now, obviously, you've shared with us so many, but I guess in addition to what you've already given us, what key life lessons do you have for us that you've learned yourself or from others along the way?
Well, as I said, probably the main one was, you know, after the traumas that I'd went through, it was, you know, we can choose how we respond. You know, it's not what happens to you. It's about who you become. What do you do with that? You know, I think a lot of people, what I've learned about this is, I've learned a lot, as I said, it's going to be three books in the end. But, you know, earlier in my life, I always thought, you know, life happiness comes from things or what's around you. You know, because when I was married, I'm not saying that we were really wealthy, but we had things. We had nice homes. We had a business. We had, you know. And then my life went to a suitcase. I went from a very, very nice home. You know, we owned a real estate business. We had, you know. And then I went to a suitcase. So, you know, that's a very different. Although I grew up in West Virginia, I didn't grow up with money. You know, anybody who grew up in the coal fields of West Virginia, you know, didn't have a lot of material things. So I went from, you know, having all these things to a suitcase. And then earlier I had lost myself, you know, I had with the car accident and all the things. And what I realized when I was healing in Minnesota and all of this beauty was, happiness is not about what the things that you buy, and it is going within yourself and finding happiness from within. And once you find that happiness from within and you heal yourself, and once you find that love from within, and then you're going to see it all around you. So many things, as I said, I forgot to live. So many wonderful things were there. I just didn't see them.
Wow.
So, and, you know, and I thought this the other day, and I thought, well, you know, sometimes I'd really like to have this back, or I would really like to have this again. But in the end, I was, you know, really thought about it, you know, on my deathbed, or on any of our deathbeds, or when we're gone, is anyone going to say, hey, she had a nice house, hey, she had a really nice wardrobe, or hey, she had a really nice car? No, nobody says that. You know, when you think back at people, you really think about how they affected people's lives and how they touched people's hearts. You know, when you look back at Gandhi, does anybody remember that when he lived in South Africa that he was a pretty wealthy guy, right? Nobody remembers that. Everybody remembers Gandhi standing up for the people and what he did for others. So I realized that, you know, happiness doesn't come from the things that we could buy. It doesn't come from anything else but from one in ourselves.
Wow, and that's absolutely true. You know, it's interesting. I think it was Abraham Lincoln who said happiness he said something along the effect of that happiness is a state of mind. That people can choose to what extent they want to be happy, you know, no matter what the circumstance. And it goes back to what you said before, you know, how you choose how you respond. Whatnot. You know, it's interesting. Your friend gave you that book during what I call the catalyst car crash or whatnot. And she told you point blank, you had two choices. You could be a victim or you could be, you know, you could be a victor, you know,
exactly.
And you chose, right. You chose the path of being a victor, not a victim.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think that's so amazing. She gave you that wonderful book that I definitely have to go out and read, of course. And people remember you for the giving that you do, the noble things that you do, not the material things or the wealth or whatnot. And definitely, I totally believe in that. People definitely need to realize that they choose how they respond to things, you know, and whatnot. So that gets me to my next question. You know, you talked about how you read that life-changing book, and that's so amazing because I'm a big fan of obviously reading books, particularly personal development books. So what book recommendations do you have for folks?
Well, definitely Viktor Frankl, yes. You know, in that period in my life when I was recovering from this car accident and I couldn't move well, you know, the 15 surgeries and the reconstruction of my face, I was very blessed to be able to have whatever book that I wanted to read. I would, you know, the library would bring books. There was a mobile library. It would bring me books.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I had Amazon Kindle. So, you know, through books, we can have the most, the world, you know, we can have the greatest mentors that ever walked the face of the earth right there in front of us.
Wow.
Even if they've been dead, even if they're still here, it doesn't matter. You know, I always loved Zig Ziglar. And in 2010, I got to meet Zig Ziglar and his son, Tom. So, you know, anything Zig Ziglar meets you at the top is another one of my favorites. So through books, I had the greatest mentors on earth when I was recovering from this car accident. Because here I sit, my view of the world is here, I can't move. So you learn through others' experiences. You learn and you absorb what others went through and you take that in. And definitely Zig Ziglar, anything of Zig, Viktor Frankl, and others, so many. You know, Tony Robbins, Go for Love, because Tony, I feel like Tony teaches us how to live.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Wow. Amazing. I love Tony Robbins as well.
Yeah.
Big fan of his. I love all of them. Zig Ziglar, Brian Tracy, Maxwell. so big. I love that, those guys. And, you know, so thank you so much for that. Definitely, I didn't get a chance to read Zig Ziglar's book, Meet You at the Top. I don't think I have. I'm definitely going to check that one out. I know he passed away recently, but the son is still carrying on the legacy. The fact that you got to meet him is amazing and incredible.
Yeah.
And you talk, you know, it's just amazing. And you talked about how these books, you know, you get access to these great mentors who are living and or not living anymore. You know, I love that a lot, you know, because I like to read biographies, autobiographies, you know, and they're so inspiring when you read these people's stories and whatnot. So, and obviously I love interviewing successful people like yourself, and I learned so much from that. So I, it's amazing that you get access, you know, it's all there and people don't realize it. Like you said before, you have all this opportunity around you. You see all these things, but a lot of times people are blind to it and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. I will be checking out some more Zig Ziglar stuff. I'm curious now, obviously this is the point during the interview where I talk about the guest writing a book, but you've already written multiple books and you have one coming out already on the COVID part of your journey. Can't wait to check that one out. Definitely keep me posted on that. And I'm curious, are you ever going to start or create your own podcast? I think you'd make a great host.
I thought about that because I love people. Sometimes I don't like them because of how, you know, people can be so mean to each other, but I love mm-hmm. people. I love connecting to people. I love meeting people from, like I said, because that's what traveling did for me. It opened my eyes and I got to see the world in a different way. So I have thought about it, especially since now that I have been doing them. You know, I've been doing interviews with people because my book Enjoy the Journey just came out April the 13th.
Hmm.
And so I've been doing all of these podcasts, and I've really enjoyed meeting different people from different places. I've been interviewed, you know, from South Africa to, you know, Europe and whatever. So I've thought about it. I just... trying to make time. maybe once I get rid of something from my schedule.
All right. Wonderful. So I'm going to definitely, if you ever do start that podcast, I'm definitely going to be a listener. So you have at least one person in the audience.
yeah, I have not my first listener, though.
Yes. You got to start somewhere. I'm sure you'll have many more. And I'm going to, you know, they say that magic happens when you're a guest on other people's podcasts. So, and you're already doing that, which is amazing. I'm going to introduce you to some other fellow podcasters I know, like Mike DiCoscio, the host of Mic'd Up, Gene Penasenko, the host of Straight and Unfiltered. I'll, you know, get you over to those guys and, okay. You know, and whatnot.
That'd be great.
So, definitely. And Yahavi St. Clair, he has his show, St. Clair Speaks. So, can't wait to make those introductions for you on your behalf. And so, again, I want to thank you so much for being a guest on the show. This conversation has been inspiring, enlightening, and definitely educational. I've learned so much from you. And I'm curious, can you describe all the ways people can reach out and connect with you if they want to put a dynamic center of influence like you in their network?
Like, how can people reach me?
Yes, and connect with you.
Okay, well, mostly the easiest way is social media. We do have a website, MotherMarthaFamilyFoundation.org. That's another way.
Okay. Thank you so
yeah.
much for that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and definitely people should go out and read your books. I think they're, you know, you have an amazing story. I can't wait to read all of them and whatnot, you know, so I can learn from a mentor like yourself by reading it. So, again, you know, thank you so much for coming on the show and being a guest. By the way, the information you provided, the website and whatnot, that will be listed in the episode description area so people can see it and read it there. Okay, again, I want to thank you for being a guest. I want to thank the audience for listening. Do you want to leave us with any last word or final send-off?
I appreciate you having me on today, and I had a great time.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you so much. You probably spent longer talking to me than you thought, I'm sure, which is fairly typical.
Okay.
You got it. Well, I had a great time as well, and I'm honored. It was an honor to have you as a guest. Thank you so much for coming on. And for the folks of the audience, thank you for listening. I'm going to see you guys in the next episode. Everyone take care and have a wonderful day. Thank you so much. Hey, guys, before you go, just real quick, if you can just do me a favor, if you can head over to the Apple Podcast app, and if you're not there already, and if you can leave me a 5-star review, that would be great. If you love the show, if you can just go ahead and do that, and that will help to spread the word about the show, and other people can enjoy the show as much as you do. And so if you can do that, that would mean the world to me. And also, if you want to email me with any feedback or any praise or support, please feel free to go ahead and do that. And you can also email me to request to be put on our email list. So we can send you out emails when new episodes come out. So thank you very much for being a fan of the show. Thank you for listening to the show and supporting the show. So if you can do that, go out and give us a 5-star review on the Apple Podcast app. That would be great. And if you can email us, so we can put you on the email list and email us with feedback and praise. That'd be amazing. Thank you so much, and I'll see you guys in the next episode. Take care. Bye-bye.